from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
And now you're listening to Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Last night, as I recall, we said it was one of the best Cubs games all year. Yeah. This one isn't too far behind when you consider the great outing by Imanaga, the clutch hits by the Cubs. They lead 4-0, out-hitting Baltimore 11-8. So I'm just going to say these two games have been the best moment of Cubs baseball in quite some time.
Couldn't agree more. You've covered the whole aspect of the game. You've played good defense. You haven't had an error in a couple days. Situational hit. You've hit with runners in scoring position. You had great pitching.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Cubs baseball comes your way in an hour. Tonight, the Cubs go for a series sweep of the Orioles pregame at 5. First pitch, 5:35 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. And you just heard Ron Coomer, so I should mention that you can meet the Coom Dog 7 to 8:30 Friday, July 19th at his restaurant, Coom's Corner in Lockport. Coom will meet fans, sign autographs, give away memorabilia, and more. It's all brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sports.
That's how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best two wins of the year? These last two? It's in Baltimore.
It certainly feels... I mean, what they had a series win over the Brewers, right, early.
This is an established, great team in Baltimore that you've gone to and played very, very well. So now the Cubs have won 5 of 6, and it's happening.
Yeah, that May 3rd, 4th, and 5th series is what I was thinking of against the Brewers, where they lost the first and then took the next two. But yeah, I mean, that was very early in the year when they were 20-21-14. So it's been a while.
You know what's happening is they've got three hitters going. They got three guys going, man.
Bush, Hap,
and Seiya.
Seiya, yeah.
The last 30 days, Hap has the fourth best OPS in the National League. Michael Bush, the 12th best, say a little lower, 37th best, but hitting it very hard. All three of them with an OPS over 800 in the last 30 days. And then I looked at this. Since June 1st, the bullpen has the 6th best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. Since June 1st. So the bullpen has leveled off a little bit. There's more enforcements on the way. They've got three hitters who are actually all rolling at the same time.
Yeah, we should remind people, though, if they are just tuning in or didn't hear it earlier, Bellinger did have a fracture in his finger and is on the injured list. Canario is coming up for the Cubs.
Yeah. So because you had the question today that we were going to do.
Well, like, the question was basically, we break the season up into into chunks based on the schedule, and sometimes I make fun of you for it because the chunk will be like, the next 42 games are against teams. Well, that's 25% of the season. But they are now 5-1 in their last six, and there are 5 to go before the deadline, and they're 44-49. So not before the All-Star break, not the deadline.
Yeah.
So what do they need to be by the deadline in order for them to be where they were last year, which was small buy? Not a mortgage the future buy, but we're not selling, we're not breaking up the team. We think we can make the playoffs, even if it's just the wild card, and we'll keep the team together because meaningful games in August, September, and maybe October is a good thing.
So July 31st, the morning of July 31st, when they're getting ready to play their third game in Cincinnati, right?
Right, so there's 5 games before the break. And then it's, what, a dozen games? 3 in Arizona, 3 in Milwaukee, 3 in Kansas City, and 3 in Cincinnati. So 17 games until the break.
17 games. So you could think about how many of those they need to win. You could think about the wild card standings, because right now where they are, they're only ahead of a few teams in the National League, but they're actually you know, pretty close to the wild card. Where are they in the wild card as it stands right now?
Well, because, yeah, I mean, there are games that happened. You know, that Pirates-Brewers game was earlier today. So let me refresh the old system here.
The old wild card standings.
Right, so they're 9.5 out of the division, mm-hmm. and they are 3.5 out of the final wild card spot, which is a virtual tie right now between the Mets and Padres for the third and final wild card spot.
So there's five teams between them and call it the Mets for now. It's the Padres, Diamondbacks, Pirates, Giants, Reds, and Cubs. So
yeah.
You could get there on the standings and kind of figure it out that way. But Jed has told us what happened last year. What he told us is that he sent out a memo, and we'll talk to Jed tomorrow. He sent out at 2:30 right here on Parkins and Spiegel. He was sent out a memo to the entire baseball operations team with their playoff odds every morning of July. And then they eventually decided to buy. And I can tell you that last year, coming out of the All-Star break, they had lost 3 out of 4 out of the break, and their playoff odds stood at 6%. Okay? 6%. Right now, the playoff odds stand at 10.8%. Last year, by the time they got to 53-52 and decided to buy, they were up at 27.4% for postseason odds. So above 25% with the stretch that he had watched was reason enough for Jed to buy. So, look, I have my issues with postseason odds because I feel like if you're watching the games and seeing the context, then you know what it feels like, and it's a little reductive. But there's the numbers wonks. There's the baseball front office telling you they look at the postseason odds. Last year, they got to 27.4%, and that was enough. So this year, it stands to reason they'd need to get to at least 25% to feel like they could buy.
It's a good line of questioning for him tomorrow. See if he's even sending the same emails. Because right now, Fangraphs says they're 10.5% to make the playoffs.
Yep.
So
that was at 10.8. It's now at 10.5 because the Brewers lost, I guess. Probably something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So it just climbs a little. It's interesting. It's just thinking about the calculations. So yeah, it's a good line of questioning for him. So at least they need to get, maybe in the standings, that means having a couple fewer teams between them and the wild card.
I was just going to say that. It's not the number of games back. It's the number of teams you need to jump.
I agree.
That's
going to affect the odds a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not, okay, you got to be 4 games better than one team. No, you got to be 4 games better than 5 teams. That's very, very, very difficult to do. They dug themselves a significant hole.
They absolutely did. Look, if they go 12-5 in these 17 games, which is obviously a long shot, but
because then that would also be 17-6 in 23 games. Because they're 5-1 in their last 6 right now.
There you go. So yeah. It'd be, 17-6 would be, that'd be a hell of a run.
Yeah.
That'd be a hell of a push.
Yes, it would be.
If they do something like that, I bet their odds end up about where they need to be.
If they do that, they won't sell. They won't sell. If they have won 17 of their last 23 games heading into the trade deadline, they will not sell. They too much money invested in the team.
Yeah, because they wanted it to be what it is. They want the full year of intrigue and interest, and it's a year where they're supposed to be winning. I agree.
But that's a pretty extreme outcome. I think that one's pretty easy, the first scenario that you just presented, personally.
Okay.
Because I just think that they would be able to say to themselves, oh, well, we're going to pass these teams.
We're at 17-6 in our last 23. Also, at the beginning of the year, we went 17-9.
Yeah, so, and then we got ravaged by injury.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, and 2 weeks became 4, became 6, became 8, as Jed has said.
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty easy stand pat, small buy spot.
So 17-6 in their last 23.
Yeah.
If they're 16-7, if they're 15-8. It's probably still a stand pat.
Probably.
We'll see what the other teams have done and where the playoff odds will be.
Yeah, but they need to play winning baseball from now until the trade deadline, and it can't be like a game over.
If it were me, I would need to know that my roster is in a particular place. I would need to know a couple things. For instance, I would need to know that all 3 dudes who are rolling right now are still rolling. I'd want to feel real good.
What if it was a different 3 guys? Like what if it was Dansby instead of Bush, or if it, you know?
Well, you'd need them too, because in addition to the 3 dudes, you'd need at least a couple other guys. trending in the right direction.
Morale would be nice.
So, look, the last 30 days, Bellinger and Nico both have an OPS under 700. Morale, the last 30 days, has an OPS under 600. Dansby's at 505.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Oh, it's brutal, man. And you know from what Sahadev showed you that time and then has written in articles, and we know it's similar to what they look at, these little 15-game rolling stats.
Yeah, rolling averages.
What's the quality of the contact? And then they look at their proprietary thing about the swing decisions. But what's the quality of the contact over the course of 15 games? Are they really hitting the ball hard? So they'll look at that stuff. I think they need to see, if it were me, I would need to see at least five dudes who are hitting pretty well. So I'm not banking on, you know, three and then nobody else is going to find it. You need to feel like some of your other guys are going to find it at that point. Offensively, that's one of the things that I would need to feel, that all three of these guys plus a couple more need to find it, and I got to feel good about them by the end of the month.
I think that what you're saying is totally reasonable. I don't know. I mean, is it five guys? Is it four guys? Like, it feels a little, that feels a little arbitrary because we know the game is so hard and so streaky that a guy could go into a bad streak on August 2nd you know, so to me,
but I'm talking about quality of contact, not necessarily production. So I'm quoting you production stats.
But yeah, you're quoting me production stats, and it is tied to also winning. That's the thing. Council has said this pretty clearly. He said it to us and other people. He's like, what does it matter? It's useful. It's useful information for a big picture thing or a long term thing. But for a season, for a team, an individual year, you got to win. So if they are like projecting well but not winning, or they're hitting well but they're losing 7-6 or 6 or 9-8 or whatever, it's like it's not going to matter because of the thing that Dan and Lawrence referenced the other day. You and I have referenced it 100 times. What Theo said to us in the bleachers in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Every season is precious. Every opportunity to sell is precious, even in a competitive window.
For sure. But Theo was secure. They had just won the World Series. Jed is in a spot where they're expected to win finally, and they are not. I think.
Yeah,
Jed...
but what did Council say to us? What did Council say? Who might have more power than Jed? When we asked him about that Theo theory, he said, just make the good decision. Just make the right decision.
Yeah. I don't think Council has more power than Jed as of right now. I don't think he does. I think that's in play for next year, and obviously if he were to outlast him, which is entirely possible. But I don't think he has more power than Jed right now.
So if this team, let's say they played 500 baseball. They went 8-9 or 9-8. In the 17 games,
and by the way,
now and then.
We should adjust it. Texter correctly points out the deadline is July 30 this year, not 31st.
Oh, okay.
So they move it to the 30th.
Good points by the texter. Thank you. So 16 games.
16 remaining games.
So if they go 8-8 in the next 16 games, you're saying Jed, because of his job status, is
because of his aspirations
or buying? No, I don't believe that.
Maybe standing pat. Maybe standing pat, depends what they see.
Listen, they don't have a lot of great options to sell unless you're going to, because they're not going to fully tear it down. They will go in the next year with an expectation of winning.
Hmm.
But the question will be like, it'll be uncomfortable. It'll be, would you sell high on Ian Happ?
You can't sell on Ian Happ. He's got a no trade clause that he negotiated in.
He'd have to agree to it.
Yeah.
Saya has one also.
Nico.
But get a guy to agree to a no trade. Guys waive no trade clauses.
I know, but Hap loves it here. His wife is from here.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's why he negotiated it. But fine. Remove that from it. Yeah, Nico, would you do it to open up more offense for the position? I think that they probably wouldn't.
No, and I think they shouldn't. I thought Layla's take, which went a little viral, and you can hear it in a promo about, like, it just goes against what you are as an org and what you are trying to establish. This is a homegrown guy you drafted. He's here. You sign him to a very manageable deal. He can play short. He can play second. It's criminal to be thinking you need to shed that money for whatever reason.
Oh, I don't think it would be about money. I don't think it would be about money. I think it would be about, can we get better slug.
I don't know, but they're mm-hmm. so close to that first level of the tax that it's like, you know, we've talked about what's going to change between this year and now and next year to a core to not have you back in this same spot. I think they would like to find a way to shed some money. And now the Bellinger thing has put a wrinkle into that. In a big way.
But I mean, you could shed a little bit of money on Neres. Mm-hmm. If, you know, no one's going to give you much for him.
Well, what
but
other you part
you could
of
trade
this,
Tyone?
As long as you mentioned the bullpen and the rotation, I hadn't talked about that. In terms of the rotation, I need Assad and Hendricks healthy and in the rotation along with your big three. Like, your rotation needs to continue to be the strength that it has been. It has to still be so. So if I'm even considering buying, I need to know, because Ben Brown is still nowhere injury-wise. Wesneski had a great start earlier in the week, but I think you need Wesneski in your bullpen. I think you need Wesneski as like your swing guy in the bullpen. And Cade Horton is nowhere as well. In the bullpen, you need Julian Merriweather, who pitched in Iowa last night. I think threw 11 pitches, topped out about 96.5 mile per hour. You need Merriweather back. If you're going to tell me that you're buying, I would need to see Merriweather and Leiter, who's back now. So Merriweather and Leiter available to set up Neres, or maybe you're going to buy a closer at that point and Neres will slot down. But you need Merriweather and Leiter healthy and productive. I guess it's Luke Little and Tyson Miller beyond that. Smiley and Wesneski as your swings. And then maybe it's Hunter Biggie, who threw an inning the other night and looked good. But like, I would need to know and feel like my roster is in a place that I believe is sustainable for the last couple of months of this season before I would make a buy. Even if they were to go, you know, 10-6. If they go 10-6 in these last 16.
And that's 15-7 in the last 22.
You think it's a buy?
Yeah, I do. I think what you're saying makes sense. I think what you're saying would be the type of conversations that they would have, but I don't think that they'd sell 15-7 heading into a break or heading into a deadline. I don't think it'd be a sell. It might be a stand pat. Might be a stand pat. Hmm. And they would just say, there wasn't any deal that was available to be made.
It could be a stand pat.
But I would say that this team, I'm not back in on them yet. I'm watching. I'm excited by these wins. They are good wins. There is time left in the season. But I don't think a massive sell-off is coming. I don't think a massive buy is coming. I don't think a big move is coming. This team hasn't... Last year was an 83-win team. This year's an under 500 team. They're spending a bunch of money. They're close to the tax threshold. I think that what was most likely here, small sell, stand pat, small buy, like a very insignificant deadline in either direction based on the results of these next 16 games.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, we're just going to play it out. We're just going to play it out and kick the can down the road a little bit. Because it's not like they have a bunch of guys on expiring deals that are obvious trade candidates for rentals.
No, if anything, I mean, maybe they sell Tyson Miller. You know, who they
and then they
found
say we're still
and turned into something.
Yeah, we're still trying to contend. But
just
it was
wanted to get something while we could at the deadline.
Yeah,
something like that.
I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a pretty underwhelming deadline.
I would need to feel really good about the roster in the ways that I described, in addition to having those playoff odds rise to a 24%, 25% threshold.
This is a bigger topic that I shouldn't throw out right now,
sure,
but I'm going to do it anyway. Do you think they regret not trading Morrell in the offseason?
So it's a good question. The power is still there.
Yeah.
The potential still feels there offensively, but now the numbers have crept to brutal, brutal spots. And it's weird, man. It's hard because his season is weird.
It is weird. He was their best until this Bush surge and the Hap thing, obviously. Like, he was their best home run hitter, OPS guy, like even at the beginning of the year.
Sure. But and it was also, there was this long stretch where like his chase rate was way down.
Yeah, it looked like a guy who was ready to break out.
The walk rate was up. It felt like all the peripherals were right there along with the power swing for it to really take a leap forward, but it has not. They do still have no idea where he is positionally. It's been a bit better at times when he's played third, but it's a good question. It's a good question for Jed tomorrow at 2:30.
There's a clip on Twitch that we play often of the last like monologue speaks that you had on Christopher Morel and the hype around him. This is like around the start of the season. It might have been like end of April, and him talking about how much he was concentrating on just hitting line drives and going the opposite way. He, in a way, does not do that at all. He's turned himself back into a dead pull hitter.
Yeah.
And they just want him to hit the ball as far as he can, pull it, and hope it finds the gap. He's abandoned completely what he said he was going to do. Hmm. So like that transition into thinking you're going to become like a more all-around baseball player to like just trying to sit with the comfort of, I'm a dead pull hitter, let me hit the ball far. I bet that's messing with him a little bit.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. It's a good point. It's interesting. Yeah, so that take not aging well, the one that we keep.
Not playing. Your fault. You just read his quotes. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing.
Ian Happ, your cleanup hitter in the lineup tonight. So Ian Happ officially has played as many games as the Chicago Cub as Derek Lee. That's crazy to me, man. Ian Happ's been around a long ass time.
Yeah, that is weird to think about. I agree. Yeah, we should. We'll certainly have time before the deadline here. The Nico conversation is an interesting one that we should continue to have, because you think it's more performance related that they're even considering it, and I think it's a desire to shed themselves of some future money and keep it fungible, keep it malleable, I should say, every year payroll wise.
We can keep talking about it, but like, if Nico is here, no one's taking Dansby. Michael Bush is one of your best hitters, and he's cheap. That's first, second, short. You have left with a no-trade clause. You have PCA in center. You have Saya in right. The only options on the team for change would be DH, catcher, and third. And Morel is here. Mm-hmm. So I'm just looking for guys who are underperforming offensively, that don't have no-trade clauses, that maybe have hit their ceiling. I obviously don't want Nico Horner to get traded, and I think that his value defensively is enormous, but they're kind of locked in at a lot of position groups, and they need to get better in the big picture. So maybe it's just a slugging DH, but, or obviously catcher would be nice, but there's just not that many options with how the team is built.
You mentioned Happ hitting cleanup. Miles Mastroboni plays third base today in right field at Seiya Suzuki, Pete Crow Armstrong at center. Tomas Nito is the catcher. So no Bellinger, if anybody missed it. Bellinger on the injured list, 10-day injured list with that fractured middle finger.
Spiegs took a weird vacation. He won't even tell us where he went. That comes in a little less than 20 minutes, but baseball could learn something from another big sport. It's next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
I don't know what's going on with any of it.
Afternoons on The Score.
It's about loving others, man. I'm telling you, baseball is the greatest sport in the world.
In our game of baseball.
Go figure. That's our game. You just never know.
That's where our game, and I say our because I love it so much.
Take somebody to a game that you want to get to know, your mom and dad or whatever. I mean, you know. And enjoy the grand game.
The grand game is your game. The grand game is baseball. A game that we all love is also basketball. A couple of us have had some addictions to it. Taney's got a doctorate. Shane's a junkie. I wrote a book about it. You love basketball.
I do.
They have a new deal, Speaks.
Yeah, they do.
11 years, $76 billion.
I mean, that's just freaking bananas.
Longest deal for a media rights deal in NBA history. It caps. The collective bargaining agreement says the cap can go up a maximum of 10%. Annually, this will ensure that it continues to do so, meaning that by the mid-2030s, players on Supermax contracts could be earning nearly $100 million per season, and guys like SGA and Luka Doncic could be making around $80 million by the 2030 season. Supermax players coming up.
Craziness.
Finals will still be on ABC and ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon and NBC get into the mix. 5-day window for matching, which means the Turner stuff is in play. But Charles Barkley said on CNBC he believes that Turner has lost the NBA. So
sad.
But that 11 years, 11 years, $76 billion.
So for each team, no matter what, they get $230 million. Each year for 11 years. And that is before any local broadcast revenue that they can set up. Unbelievable. So when we see all this money going out, NBA players are like, yeah, this is great. Okay, yeah, yeah, we're good.
Well, I mean, it's the best gig in team sports.
Because to be an NBA player.
Best gig in team sports. Because it's a fully guaranteed contract. You have a collective bargaining agreement that says you get a percentage of national revenue, which uh-huh. all of the leagues have, but it's split among the fewest players. So NFL, more players, not guaranteed contract. Baseball, guaranteed contracts, way more players.
Way more players.
And way more games.
Way more games, but, you know, easier games on the body than the NBA games.
Sure, but basketball players get the summer off, yeah. unless they make the finals. They get the summer off. It's 82 games, the contracts are guaranteed, and it's split among 320 players.
And it's a very healthy league. Every 5 years, they don't seem to have a massive work stoppage that threatens to lose an entire season and alienates and pisses off the entire fan base.
Yeah, they generally speaking like the commissioner a lot and have at least a working relationship with the owners.
They've got a salary cap. Sure.
Yep.
They also have a salary floor. If you're an NBA player, you might want to like go to a certain spot, but you could go anywhere and get paid an enormous amount. Just about any team, if they've playing their cards right, could sign any of these people that they want. And you'll see very good players, you know, with options of many teams to go to.
Yeah. And I mean, they also have things incentivized so that you could actually get more on your first contract extension, your second contract by the team that you drafted you.
For sure.
So which incentivizes SGA to stay in Oklahoma City,
right.
Giannis to stay in Milwaukee, Jokic to stay in Denver,
You know what else has happened every time that we've been here working for NBA free agency? A lot of people sign right away. Hey, NBA free agency comes.
It's a good TV show.
Oh, but it's a good TV show. It's good radio coverage. It's a good few days, and then the dust settles, and you figure it out. Meanwhile, baseball, my sport, just absolute dog crap in the way that the offseason happens these days. Max Scherzer, who is one of the big bosses of the Players Association, is a guy, he's really thoughtful on this stuff, Danny. Last year, he showed up to negotiations, or last time they had negotiations, he showed up in a Rolls Royce. You know, he drove the Rolls Royce up there. Because it seems like Max is very enamored with what the high-end guys could do and not really worried about the rank and file. But he was on foul territory and with AJ and such and was asked about how they can get more teams bidding for their services and how they can get a better free agent period in baseball, which has absolutely sucked for a long time.
How would you actually navigate this? You know, this CBA, this is CBA talk. How would you do this? You can't have a deadline. That's just not going to happen. The only way to make teams actually sign players is to have the league be more competitive. When you have this marketplace, you know, the owners are trying to weigh out the market and see how the chips fall and see if they can get, they go through the trade market first. They're always looking to see if they can trade user prospects and trade instead of having to make the free agent sign. So you kind of look at that, you know, the trade market first, and then, you know, once they realize they don't want to pay the prospect price, you know, that's when they'll actually pay with dollars. So it's a convoluted process, but to expedite that would be to have more teams being competitive, having the bottom half of the league really trying to chase down those extra wins, because you have teams that still are in the offseason that are saying, hey, we're not in a competitive window, so we're not going to sign any players. Well, that's just taking away a potential landing place for somebody within the market. So you kind of get this top-down and top, you know, it's trickle-down and trickle-up economics work, all kind of working together here. And if you wanted the free agents to actually move faster, having, you know, policing the bottom would be the way to go.
Oh, God. All right. So that would be great if there were more teams at the bottom that were willing to spend.
Yeah.
That would be great. But what he's not for, and what the Players Association has never been for, is a cap. And the owners are not going to give you a salary floor with no salary cap. That's never, ever going to happen. So Scherzer and these players who don't understand that you're not going to get a floor without a cap. It's a complete non-starter every time. So they never actually get anywhere on the biggest issue to try and fix the health of the league. And that's why you forever have teams that just can't spend or won't spend or choose not to spend because there is no floor. But you're never going to get a floor if you don't give a cap. Baseball desperately needs a complete restructuring of the entire thing, which has a floor and a cap, which is the way that every other team sport works.
So a few things. I don't think the players are blameless in what you're talking about because they don't want the floor or they don't want the cap. But it is more to me on the owners than it is the players because there's enough revenue in the game from revenue sharing that there are teams at the bottom that are absolutely underspending on payroll and laying in the cut and just taking a profit.
But they're not going to change that. Teams are not going to change that without there being a floor. And you're not going to get a floor without giving them a cap. But so give them a cap.
But you're right. But this is a millionaire v. billionaire thing. And there are fewer billionaires that I would like to change their mind to say, no, man, your franchise valuation goes up. Media deals go up.
Mm-hmm.
Reinvest the money into your... It feels like it would be easier to find 30 billionaires that want to own 30 baseball teams who would at least spend to break even on their teams, which would also make payrolls go up because you wouldn't have people like in Pittsburgh and other places just laying in the cut and taking a profit than it is to get however many players are in the players' union that some guys haven't been paid yet, some guys have been paid hundreds of millions of dollars, some guys have gotten paid nothing to agree to put a cap on it when that would be seen as a huge loss for the union.
I understand, but they're going to have to, in the long run, they should be open and willing to take that perceived loss.
I get it.
For the health of everything, because what ends up happening is you've got the guys at the top end, like Scherzer and others,
yeah,
wanting to make sure that the top guys can still get whatever astronomic number the next reckless Steve Cohen is going to do, and the guys at the bottom end will never get to the spot where so somebody signed the other day. Who is it? Signed with the Washington Wizards, like a random late free agency. Sadiq Bey. I'm like, oh, wow, there's Sadiq Bey. He signed with the Wizards. $20 million for Sadiq Bey. And yeah, obviously, some of that is due to the size of the teams and everything. But like
a big part of it.
But the health of the league allows the rank and file to make an incredible salary that almost compares to some of the other guys, and baseball just refuses to let itself get there.
I had a business person with a baseball team, this was years ago, say, as much as our players complain about it, and as acrimonious as the whole thing is, we've had someone offer them, hey, if you want to go to your friends in in the NBA or the NFL and just cross out their logo and then put MLB on it, you could do it. But like, you guys have the best deal because of the percentage of the revenue that you get, the fact that you get some of the local revenue and the ticket sales and all of that, and that the contracts are guaranteed. So like, baseball players have a great deal. There's just, they hold it like a principle, bedrock principle of their union, that there's no cap on their earnings.
And I want a healthier league and a more competitive league and a better, more competitive, egalitarian product.
What is much more likely is a work stoppage in a couple of years.
Yay!
That's baseball for you. Taking you up to Cubs and Brewers in just a little bit. Spiegs won't even tell us where he went on his vacation. He says it's so weird. It's next on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Lockport High School's CM Punk. Most famous Lockport alum? It's probably Punk. I think you got it.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia.
Afternoons on The Score.
Spiegs, when you were on vacation with Mike North.
I missed that one.
Syntax. All right. We talked about where I was when I was gone Monday and Tuesday. I was working on my vacation days out in L.A. What were you doing?
So we went to this place called Getaway Cabins, and they have them all over the country.
Getaway Cabins.
And it was pretty darn interesting. So it's this place. It's over out by Saugatuck, Michigan. So out that way.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the getaway cabins are tiny. They're basically the size of a shipping container. So it's kind of like a tiny house. And you've got two Adirondack chairs and a fire pit. They'll pre-make a fire for you. So it's sitting right there ready to go in the fire pit. There's a grill attached to the fire pit. So you can use the grill and grill some stuff up. But the cabin itself is tiny. Like, there's a bed, there's a little table, there's a little sink, and
where's the TV?
There's no TV.
Yeah, it's figured.
And a tiny bathroom, but it's fully,
plumbing?
Full plumbing and function. It's glamping. It's essentially glamping. And I'd never done it.
So no Wi-Fi?
No Wi-Fi. Okay. Absolutely no Wi-Fi.
So this is like a darkness retreat?
Middle of the woods. Not quite darkness because there's power. There's central air. It was amazing.
Central air?
Yeah. I mean, so a tiny little space. Doesn't take much to cool it down. But yeah, it was. It's a guy who was had a tech startup, and then he decided to try and do this instead. And he got some Harvard Graduate School design students to help him design the thing. And it was freaking fascinating. So it was like camping, but unbelievably comfortable, straight up glamping out there in the middle of the woods with nothing to do but play cards. I brought a coloring book, maybe do some coloring, lit a fire, and watched the fire burn for like 5 hours in an Adirondack chair, just hanging out with Christine, talking about stuff. It was awesome, and I never expected to like it, and I absolutely loved it.
How long are you there?
2 days, two nights. So two nights and parts of 3 days.
Wow.
Would you glamp, Danny? Would you and Steph glamp successfully? Shane, would you and Kalen glamp? Tanny, you and Odie, would you guys?
Absolutely. You've seen these photos? Shane pulled up the website. I've looked at these things. I've looked at the Starved Rock thing. I think Shane's been there.
Yeah.
They look awesome. That's my perfect way of escaping all this foolishness.
Dude,
you know?
How close are you to other people? Are you glamping next to other cabins?
No, they're around the way or kind of across the way. At one time I heard music. And I was annoyed that I heard music. And I texted. There's a number you can text to get in touch with the people that run the place.
Oh,
yeah,
you did it?
100%. I texted and said, brother, the music's a little too loud. Would you mind reminding them of your silence policy?
It's your brand.
Dude, come on.
You snitching. Hey, this,
it's distracting. Music
I
can't be in the background.
Divvy. I reserved this divvy. It's in his private property. Tell him to release the divvy.
When I talk about going up to northern Michigan, this is what I'm striving
for. That's what you want.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I started my vacation life not glamping with camped in tents, and we were caught in the eye of a couple tornadoes. My dad would back that up, and then we upgraded to a camper. But I've used this company, this getaway. I did the one at Starved Rock. But my last few weekends have been lake life, where there are TVs, there's Wi-Fi, but you don't use it. I could change my life to be doing that instead. In a heartbeat.
Lake life I could do.
I'm glad you did this.
Lake life I could do no problem. Love a lake house, but
what I'm saying is you still have access to your phone and a TV. My screen time went down to 25 minutes for all those days.
Yes, absolutely. It'll sound how it is. The minimalistic nature of it, I like the idea of detaching, of being in the wilderness, sure, of the fire, the woods, a lake, going out on the water, fishing, boating, all of that stuff. I don't know if I love the confined space and the small bed and the small bathroom and that part of it. The woods is great. The campfire is great. Cooking your meals, all that. That's all great. I don't know if I like the small house stuff.
I think they nailed it.
I don't like tiny houses.
It's ingeniously well designed.
Okay.
The bed is not small. I think it's a queen size bed. Somehow they fit in there. There's shelf space. It's remarkable how there's enough shelf space. It's unbelievably efficient and well designed.
The worst part is it sounds like you're too close to other people. That's the flaw in this whole thing. If you can hear
ours
someone else's
wasn't.
Music.
It's just the music. Ours wasn't.
We also
had a second bed. Did you have a loft? We had a loft on ours.
No, I saw they have some of those. Yeah, so that's an option. But man, it's hilarious though. At one point, Christine's getting changed and I'm standing there and she's like, would you get out of my dressing room, please? But the dressing room is also the foyer, which is also half of the dining room table. You know, it's all in there, but I thought it was ingeniously well designed and it was exactly the kind of escape, but comfortable. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
What if
show outing?
Something happened, you know, like you,
If like a murderer came by?
No. Like,
because we thought about
bring
that.
Your gun.
Someone needed to let you know about something with Ruben. Like, you know what I mean? Like, are you reachable?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there was cell service.
There was cell service.
Yeah, there was.
You could be on your phone if you wanted.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah, not great service, but good enough service.
Okay.
You could sit there on your phone if. Right. You could scroll Twitter in an Adirondack chair with the fire in the woods all around you.
All right, then I would do it.
It's got to be somewhere to get these takes off.
That's what I'm saying.
You guys heard about trees?
I can't go viral.
Got to hate these trees.
Then I would do it. Jed Hoyer tomorrow at 2:30. Thank you to Connor O'Donnell and Kevin Lapka. Twitch chat, video stream. Thank you, sir. It's Shane Reardon, our executive producer. Thank you, sir. Chris Tannehill making us sound better than we are each and every day. Cubs baseball follows us. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkins. We are Parkins and Spiegel. This is The Score.
It's not just another day. It's today. And maybe that's just another way of saying attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. But, yeah, it was a great day.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.